The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Greetings, everyone. It's a genuine delight to be back here practicing with all of you. Many of you have been in this Dharma group since its inception in the spring of 2020, as I have been. And I think it's remarkable, the meditation community that we've been able to create together. And I do mean together. Of course, you know, we owe everything to Gil, who's initiated this. But the way this meditation group has evolved has been in response to all of the participants all over the world. So I would just like to honor everything that all of you have brought to this community and continue to bring to this community. When I was standing in for Gil in February, I talked about opening the Dharma heart. And I made some reference to my own path and my own difficulties in opening my heart. And I would just like to share with all of you that if you find this practice not so easy, you're not alone. And I'm with you on that. It takes, for some of us, it takes a long time. For some of us, you know, some of us are naturals and, you know, we become free rather, or at least the initial stages of freedom, we can manage to do that relatively quickly. But for many of us, it takes not just years, but in my case, decades. So it's really important not to set the bar too high, because if we do, we'll get frustrated. And we won't, but we may be discouraged and we may quit. But I think all of you who have been practicing for some time, if you look back on how you were before you started practicing, and then how you developed over time, chances are you've learned some things, and chances are you're a little bit more comfortable in this body and mind, and at ease in this body and mind than you may have been before you started. So for this coming week, the theme that I've chosen is tastes of freedom. And freedom is a big word. And there are many degrees of freedom. There's a whole gamut of, you know, little smidgens of freedom, and then something a little bit more substantial, and then maybe a little bit deeper, or maybe a little bit more embodied and lasting. But for most of us, it does take time. But I do believe strongly that even as relative beginners, if we can taste something of the freedom that's in store, as we can see in the suttas from the Buddha's own experience and the experience of all the arahants, whether they're monks or nuns or laymen or laywomen or gender free, you know. It is very, very valuable to have even the tiniest taste of freedom. So my program for the week is kind of ambitious, and I'll do my very best to be as inclusive as I can and make it as accessible as possible. But we are going to look at this week four of the relatively advanced states of meditation that support our practice. They support the seven factors of awakening. They support especially our meditation. And in the suttas, it is clearly described that enlightenment doesn't come as a thunderbolt out of the sky. It comes from dedicated meditation practice. Practice that is so heartfelt and continuous that we, little by little, make progress in letting go of our attachments, letting go of grasping to what we like and what we want more of, and letting go of being aversive to what we don't like and want to push away. And finding our peace in this body and mind the way it is right here, right now, in this moment. So I was pleased to listen to some of Ying's teachings last week, and the theme that she spoke about, namely the multidimensional, multifaceted realm of practice, practice that includes much more than just meditation, practice that includes all of us, all of our life. And she shared some lovely stories from Gil's little treasury of stories called The Monastery Within. And this is a lovely theme. And in fact, it segues beautifully into what I had chosen to talk about this week, which is tastes of freedom. The Monastery Within, I think we can say that the Monastery Within is who we are. It's us. It's inside here. It's not, you know, someplace else. And what that means is that as our meditation deepens and we are able to little by little step into states of samadhi, that's the monastery within. That's what opens the doors to freedom. And, as I dwelled on in the meditation and mentioned at the beginning of this talk, we need to cultivate patience to be able to really enter into that monastery within. And then, I was corresponding with Kim Allen, who's going to teach next week. And she asked me what my theme was going to be because she didn't want to overlap. And I told her. And she said, "Oh, that's great. I think that'll work with mine nicely." And so I asked her what her theme was going to be. And hers is savors. So mine this week is tastes. Of freedom, savors of freedom. And next week you'll get a lovely, I'm sure, 5 days of teaching on the emotional tones of a teaching. The word in Pali is rasa, and that means tastes or savors. So with that, I would like to express my appreciation for the practice that each of you brings to this community, and that each of you, all of us, offer to everyone we come in contact with, and that radiates out of that circle to wider and wider circles like a pebble being dropped into a calm lake. So with this bow, I express my gratitude for your practice and end this talk, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Okay, Megha, we'll go ahead and if anyone has any questions on Zoom, you can go ahead and raise your virtual hand, I guess, and we'll unmute you and you can ask your questions. So we'll give some time for people to collect their thoughts.
Kevin, you do the selection, please.
Sure, we'll do. Okay, so we've got Luna. Hey, Luna, you can go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for offering this morning. I just had a little flash when you were talking about patience, how patience and equanimity feel very similar. Mm-hmm. But it's just a body feeling, and I don't know how. So I wonder if you have any thoughts on that.
I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, there in this volume of teachings, there are many Dharma lists. One of them is the seven factors of awakening. And in that, equanimity comes at the very end because it's the highest of them all. And in fact, in every list that equanimity is part of, it's always at the end because it's the ultimate. In the Brahma Viharas, the four flavors of love, whether it's metta or let's just say whether it's friendliness or compassion or sympathetic joy or equanimity. And there's also another list of the 10 paramitas in which patience is highlighted as a very important quality to cultivate. And for many of us, it's not so natural. You know, it's easy to get ahead of ourselves. It's easy to, you know, want some kind of success earlier rather than later. And so every time we find ourselves becoming impatient, or maybe actually if we've gone too far and we've become impatient, then we can say, oh, welcome. Welcome, impatience. I know you. I think I'm not going there right now. Kind of like, you know, if you meet Mara, the tempter, you slow down enough so that you can recognize that you're impatient. And then you can say, no, thank you. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, totally. Thank you so much.
Pleasure.
Okay, Hugh, you can go ahead and unmute.
Thank you, Meg. Meg, early in your talk, you said that the fontanelle is still an open gateway. I've heard some say that the fontanelle closes in early adulthood. Could you expand a little more on that?
Sure. So what you say is correct if we're talking about physiology. So yes. When we were babies, we all had fontanelles that were wide open, you know. And as adults, there's still, you know, a little opening in there. But I was referring to, and when I started talking about this, I said, these are not Buddhist teachings. This is different. So you won't find anything about this in the Buddhist scriptures about the chakras and, you know, the openings to the cosmic energy and to the earth energy. But I've done a lot of Qigong practice and have been very influenced by the idea of, you know, if you really do sit up straight and your head is not, you know, flopping forward or, you know, off to some angle, and you're centered and your perineum is open and your fontanelle is open, then the energy, the qi, which, by the way, is one of the seven factors of awakening, virya, that can flow easily. And when that energy starts to be unobstructed, it has a very calming and purifying effect. So, you know, when I'm talking about the fontanelle or the perineum, I beg your forgiveness because Gil would never talk about this stuff.
Thank you very much.
Gil always says, no, Meg, I don't want to do Qigong. You don't need to teach Qigong during the retreats. I just want to keep things simple. So, anyway.
No, I appreciate it. I've been thinking about Qi quite a bit, and thank you for tying it in.
Did I miss what you said?
I said just a thank you. I've been... I'm a Tai Chi student, so I've been thinking
about
Qi quite a bit. And Qi kind of is almost one half of an important part of my practice. But it's seldom talked about in our meditation group. Yeah. So thank you for tying it in.
And you know, when I was trying to introduce this meditation, a way of staying with the breath, where we stay with the whole cycle of the breath as this sort of oval of energy going up the back, across the top of the head and down the front and then back through the perineum to the... That is called the grand circulation in Qigong. And Qigong is the ancestor of all the martial arts.
Oh. So the...
Including Tai Chi.
So the Qi, after it enters the Dong Tien and passes through the body and comes out the fontanelle, it returns back and comes back in the Dong Tien again.
Yeah, and you can feel it coming. I mean, Venerable Analio, when he does a sort of introduction to meditation, he invites people to straighten the spine, but feel it coming up the back. And then it's up to each of us to know where we're most comfortable concentrating our energy. It might be in the dantian, the belly. Mm. And the advantage of that is that you can never overdo it.
Wow.
And for people like me, it's often the heart.
Mm.
But, you know, you have to be a little bit careful there because, you know, you can go overboard. And for a lot of people who don't practice, you know, everything's happening up here in the head.
Yeah.
And that's really easy to overdo. So you don't want to try to invite too much chi into the head center. Okay, enough of that.
Megan, I think we have one last question from, this came on YouTube. If you find it increasingly difficult to meditate, should you continue to try?
Well, I mean, it depends. I think I'm going to try to answer that for you this week by hopefully giving you a few tastes of freedom, the freedom that comes when we stick with it for a long time. It does work. And many people do get discouraged because it's so difficult. And, you know, honestly, we are not programmed for this. Our DNA is telling us, uh-oh, watch out, there's danger. Don't go there. It's, you know, it's, there's a lot of work to do to let go of that intuitive programming of being reactive and clinging either to getting rid of something or getting more of something. The clinging is what perpetuates our suffering. But to be able to start letting go of that clinging, we need to practice. And, you know, if your problem is that it's difficult for you physically, you can try other positions. But I would gently encourage you to stick with it and see where it takes you. Does that work for you?
As she said, thank you on YouTube.
Okay. Alrighty.
Okay, Meg, I think that's all the questions we have for today. So, yeah, thank you very much for your teachings.
My pleasure. Thank you all for being here.